The topic of the talk this evening will be about people who get discriminated against, people who get rejected, and I'm going to make it a wider talk just on how we stigmatize parts of our life. And because we stigmatize it, give it a bad rap, a bad reputation, it just makes life much, much, much worse. And so just we're using basic Buddhism, some of the principles, to make our lives much easier. Now, not judging, or rather, if we do look at an event in our lives, give it another spin, to look at it in a different way, because it's a basic Buddhist teaching. You cannot change the world. It's so hard to change the world, but you can certainly change your attitude towards it. And sometimes when you change your attitude, just the way you look at it, the whole world changes with you. And that's, you know, the trouble is that we have stigmatized so many things in life, and that just creates too much pain. And part of Buddhism, almost say the essential part of it, is to learn how to lessen the suffering in your life, other people's lives, and lessen the suffering in the whole world. So learning how not to stigmatize things. And just as we were talking beforehand, I always like to introduce recent things to bring these talks back to the real life. There was someone going through what they called a divorce. And now, divorce can have such stigma to it. You're going through a divorce. There's nothing wrong with going through a divorce. So I just gave it a different name. I called it recycling. And why not? You know, it's the same thing, you know, you're just changing partners in life, you know, you change dustbins, you change houses, you change careers, it's just recycling. And then straight away it just takes a little bit of the edge of it. Ooh, I must be a failure, I got divorced. And when that happens, you don't tell your friends about it. You know, you hide it because it's stigmatizing. You think it's wrong, it's bad, you're a failure, and that is the worst part of any of the things I'm going to be talking about. Not acknowledging it, not bringing it up, and seeing it in the terrible light, the negative light, which is what the reason we call things like stigma. So if you do go through a divorce, and I told the person this story, that this was told to me by a friend of a friend. They went to go and visit one of their old school friends. I've just been visiting some old school friends and university friends. I've only just come back from London this afternoon, so I've been travelling around the world. Not holiday. Monks don't have a holiday. We work. So teaching in many different universities and teaching in Buddhist groups over the last 2.5 weeks. So if I'm not here, I am working to try and make sure that you know, these teachings can be spread to many, many people. And of course, it's very, very popular, which is why you know, I wish I actually give really boring talks. If I really gave boring talks, then people wouldn't come, and I could relax and rest. You know, that's one of the reasons I keep on telling the old jokes again and again and again, because I thought that people get so fed up with them, they won't come here anymore. But it doesn't work that way. It's the same I just saw in the newspapers on the aircraft coming back here. The Rolling Stones have just been in Perth. I mean, how many times have you listened to the same song again and again and again? I can't get no satisfaction, or whatever. But people still keep on going, and they complain to me about repeating stories and jokes. Complain to Mick Jagger for singing the same old songs every time for the last 50 years. So anyway, so if I do tell any old stories or any old jokes, golden oldies. Beautiful things. But anyway, going back to stigmatization. All right, like stigmatization of old age. Why is it that when people ask you how old they are, if they're after a certain age, they won't tell you? And, you know, especially women. You know, it's true that my mother, I never knew how old she was. True, absolutely true. I asked her, she would not tell me. Come on, Mummy, I know you're old now. You don't have to hide it anymore. You can enjoy your old age. As for me, you know, I'm not afraid of telling my age because, you know, I keep on saying to people, the older you are as a monk, the more venerable you are, the more you respect you have. Because, you know, if you're a young monk, I mean, no one thinks you're wise. But the older you are, just, you know, the more cool you are as a monk. So, you know, one of my sayings is life begins at 70 for a holy man and a holy girl as well. So I'm only just getting into it. I'm only 63. Give me another 70 years and I'll really be holy. But anyway, so why worry about your age, whatever it is? Don't stigmatize it. Be proud. I am 75 and proud. Because when you stigmatize anything, you think it's something wrong. You're scared. You're upset about something. That is the suffering. So if you're 75 or pushing 80 or 85, great, I'm out of here soon. You don't have to worry about climate change. You don't have to worry about all these other things, which when you're young, you really have to worry about these things a lot. It's so free being old. So old and celebrate it. And celebration of these things is no celibacy as well. Because I love telling this story. One of my proudest moments, I don't mind telling the proud moments I've had in my life. You know, when I was with my brother just a couple of days ago in London, you know, he was saying, Ajahn Brahm, you keep on telling us all about these wonderful things you've done and all the great things you've done. You're so humble, he told me. And I said, yes, you've got it. If you're humble, you've got to tell people about it. If you're modest, flaunt it. What's the point of being humble if no one knows about it? So anyway, one of my wonderful achievements in life was scoring an invitation to the Gay Pride Breakfast in Perth. I was really proud of that. So I'm not gay, okay? I was heterosexual before, and now I'm not gay. Now I am celibate. So when I went over to this Gay Pride Breakfast, had to give a few words, and I told all these gays, lesbians, transgenders, I think it was in Curtin University sometime, before they had the Mardi Gras, and I was invited there because, you know, I was supporting, you know, sort of gay people. They just discriminated against by everybody else but me. I will stand up for you and I'll support you. And so when I was asked to say a speech, you know, you have to make it up on the run. And so my speech was that you think that you are deviant. You think that you are strange. You're nothing. Gay people, lesbians, transgender, that's ordinary these days. But celibacy, no sex at all. Now that is challenging. That is weird. That is deviant. So I said, I'm more deviant than any of you because I'm celibate. No sex rocks. Now I say that because there are many men and women I know, they're not monks and nuns, they prefer to be by themselves, they prefer, you know, not to have sex, and there's nothing wrong with that. Because when we stigmatize these things, it's a choice. You can make your own choice, and if you feel more comfortable like that, go for it. Just like women who are single, who don't want to have a partner, they don't want to be recycled again and get married once more. Why not? What's wrong with that? Because for a long time, especially women, you know, if they didn't have a partner, there'd be something wrong with you. It's stigmatizing these things. So I went up on that Gay Pride Breakfast and said, celibate rights. I'm going to fight for the right of people to make the choice. If they want to be celibate, good on you. You know, I've actually seen this by so-called psychologists who's saying, if you don't have sex, that is unnatural. And that sort of rang a bell for me because I remember reading articles, you know, from these, please excuse me, but they're bigots, who's saying that, you know, gays are unnatural, that we can take you to a clinic and train you to be something different. And if you're a gay, I mean, that is really disgusting. And same with celibates. It's natural. Part of life is like that. Part of life is to be old. Part of life is whatever it is. But it's natural to be these ways. And so stop stigmatizing these things. Because when you stigmatize things, people hide it. They feel there's something wrong with them. They think they made a mistake in life. And that is the pain and suffering which, you know, people have to experience too often in life. So if you're old and if you're celibate and what else, if you are single, celebrate it. So my float will be celebrate celibacy. It's a nice little saying. But it's not just that. There's many other things in your life. If there's anything in your life you try and hide, the fact you're going through a difficult time in your marriage, or you've got some sickness like a cancer, or you've got some mental illness, why is it we hide those things? Why is it we feel there's something wrong with us? It's because of stigma. And when we feel there's something wrong with us like that, has huge amounts of negative effects in our life. And there's one lady who, I think it was a lady, sent the email saying, can you please say something about rejection? Because I think, if I remember correctly, she had MS, multiple sclerosis, and many of her friends rejected her. Sometimes it's difficult to be with somebody who is, you know, dying, fading away, losing all of their faculties, not being able to be the person you expect them to be. And some of you think, oh, it's so sad, so depressing to see one like that. Please don't do that. Please remember, it's not just the disease, there's a person behind that. The same with someone who's, the old story of someone who's gone to jail, has gone to prison. You know, sometimes I say, and there's a lot of truth to this, there but for good fortune go you and I. You know, sometimes many of you may have done something and you weren't caught. Some people are caught and they go to jail. So don't just stigmatize people who have been to prison as sometimes being second-class citizens. Because if that's what happens, again, it just stigmatizes society, separates us from them. And that is a major problem. I was gave a talk on mental health in Hamburg University, you know, when I was over there, and just mentioning just how we stigmatize mental health. Because there is something in the European Union they call inclusion. In all the schools, universities, instead of keeping mental health patients out of the system, they want to bring them in. So any sort of class, you know, will probably have, you know, maybe someone with Down syndrome, someone with ADD. Instead of separating them out into a special class, move them in. Because that's something in Buddhism which actually works. When we separate them, stigmatize them, those are the Down syndrome people. We are the normal people. And that is a huge difficulty. It makes things much worse in our life. And I know this because there's a little simile in Buddhism. It's a simile which I put in the latest book, The Good, Bad, Who Knows, about the simile of the elephant. Now, in very brief, elephant, very good elephant, very kind, very gentle, in the zoo, the kids would play with it. And, you know, kids sometimes tease these animals. But the elephant was so gentle, didn't mind being teased and poked and stuff. But over the space of a couple of weeks, that elephant started to grow unkind, uncompliant, and started to do weird things like spraying all the kids with water from the trunk, like waiting until the keeper was right beside it before it pooed all over the keeper. And it just became willful and nasty and bad. And the zoo in which the elephant lived called in the vet. And the vet looked at that elephant to see if anything was wrong. The elephant was in good health. They even tried an elephant psychologist to see if there was any psychosis in that elephant. And no one could find out why this elephant suddenly became a bad elephant. And so, the last resort, invite the monks. It's true, you know, sometimes when no one else can sort things out, we have to sort things out for them. It happens so often. And so they got the elephant to, sorry, not the elephant, the monk. They got the monk. Please don't think I look like an elephant. I know I'm putting on weight, but not that much. So they got the monk to go and spend the night with the elephant, to meditate in the elephant enclosure. And the monk was meditating and meditating and meditating. And at night time was very, very quiet.
But about 1 a.m. in the morning, the monk heard a noise. There was a sound behind the elephant enclosure. And he went behind to check out what was going on. And sure enough, there was a group of people meeting in secret behind the elephant enclosure. It was a group of drug dealers. And they were talking about, you know, their trade. And all the people they would beat up because they didn't pay their drug debts. And all the terrible things they were going to do. And the monk knew exactly what the problem was. Because just associating with bad people. Even an elephant doesn't know sort of English. The very fact there was bad vibes in the back of the elephant enclosure over many, many weeks, that had changed the character of the elephant. So, you know, the monk just told the police and they got those drug dealers arrested, and for the next week they got the monks and the nuns to do chanting and meditation behind the elephant enclosure. And just a peaceful, kind, gentle, compassionate, you know, great jokes the monks and nuns would say. That changed the whole elephant until he became even better than he was before. And that's based on an old story told by the Buddha, which just says the people you hang out with, the places you go, that actually does change you. And so if you have Down syndrome, say, people coming along in the normal classes, you will find that, you know, the intensity of that sort of mental illness will become much less when they associate with other good people. You don't stigmatize and separate people. You bring them in together. It's one of the reasons why in many temples, not my temple, they bring the kids in there for, you know, 2 weeks novice training during the school holidays. So, you know, you dump your kids in the monastery and then you can go off holiday somewhere and you're you know the kids are well looked after. And because your kids are hanging around monks for 2 weeks, just like the elephant, it changes their character. Your children become nice and peaceful and compliant. And that's what it works, and people really like that. The problem is that having these noisy rat bag kids with the monks, it changes the monk's character too. It works both ways, which is why we don't do it. But anyway, you can see just how we influence one another. And so that inclusion was beautiful, but stigmatizing is actually separates people. Which is one of the reasons why it's not a very good idea. It's not kind, it's not wise, it doesn't work. Which is one of the great things why we can have, sort of say, Down syndrome kids in our classes, not special schools, not special classes, but inclusion. And it also means, you know, it's not just the, say, people with Down syndrome actually get included and they feel much better about that, but also it means that the other children in that class can develop some kindness and compassion, understanding this is part of life, this is real life. And so instead of trying to exclude it, which is denying it, getting upset about it, thinking something wrong about it, it's included, we have compassion, which is embracing these things. And sometimes people ask me, what is compassion? What is kindness? Is it something you give on somebody to may you be happy and well? That is actually a bit of a mistake in Buddhist ideas of compassion and metta. May all beings be happy and well. That's not loving kindness. Because some people just aren't happy. And if you try and make them happy, that's not compassion. Be happy. You should be happy. Why aren't you happy? You bad Buddhist, you're not happy. Which is also why just beforehand, you know, somebody sort of asked me how am I feeling today, and I said, terrible. Actually, I'm feeling pretty good, but, you know, sometimes I say that just to make a point of truth and Dhamma. Why do we always have to be happy? Now, are you always happy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year? Of course you're not. So at least be honest. So now I'm jet-lagged, I'm exhausted, I've been traveling all over the place. So I said, I feel terrible today. And I said, and I demand my right as a senior Buddhist monk to be terrible. And I'm not going to stigmatize it. In fact, the book which you can get from our library, you know, The Good, Bad, Who Knows, this month it was published in the North American and European edition.
because I've just been over there signing books and stuff. And that title is Don't Worry, Be Grumpy. And it's doing really well in North America. I saw many, had to sign many in Canada where I went, and also in Europe. Don't Worry, Be Grumpy. And so why did you give a book that title? And actually, I didn't. The publishers did. But nevertheless, it's a good title. And that comes from a girl, I don't think she's here today. She was on one of my meditation retreats. And after 3 or 4 days, she really got upset. And so what? And so she came for an interview. What's wrong with you? She said, look, I feel terrible. Every morning I get up, I'm in a bad mood. And you keep telling me I should be in a good mood. And that really hurts. And I feel so terrible. I feel like I'm making a big mistake. I feel that, you know, I'm doing something wrong. I said, it's okay to be grumpy. What's wrong with being grumpy? He said, but you keep on telling us to be happy. And I'm meditating. You're supposed to be happy when you meditate. I've been coming to this temple for a long time. And I feel I'm letting you down, Ajahn Brahm, because I'm grumpy. So she's really having a big problem with grumpiness. So what I did, I went into my office, which was just next door to where I was giving the interviews, got on a computer very quickly, and I printed out a grumpy license. Because, you know, she really respected me. You know, she takes me as her teacher. And when you're a teacher and people respect you, you have authority. So I decided to use my authority. I constructed a grumpy license. Now, it's a nice words in the front, no license, official license. This license grants to, you know, the person, the permission to be grumpy at any time, for any reason, or for no particular reason, for the rest of her life, signed Ajahn Brahm. So when I gave her permission to be grumpy, I was not stigmatizing grumpiness. If you feel grumpy, go for it. Now can you get the idea? Because in many places now, you're not allowed to be grumpy. There's something wrong with you. You know, you're a Buddhist. You are the president, or I don't know, there's no president here this evening. She hasn't come today because she's probably grumpy. Well, I know the secretary was here earlier, but she's gone too. She's probably grumpy. There's nothing wrong with being grumpy. So giving people a license for that is not stigmatizing grumpiness. And of course, you can see that you can't change the world, but you can certainly change your attitude towards it. And being sick. You know, is Ajahn Brahm allowed to be sick? Sometimes, actually, I'm not pretty. I allow myself to be sick these days. That's why I'm not sick. If you allow yourself to be grumpy, you get permission to be grumpy, you're not grumpy anymore. It's amazing when you give things permission, things get healed. That lady, she actually, when she was not struggling so hard to be happy, when she could let things be, then she became happy. Once she had her license, she was very happy about it. Now you get the psychology here. This is Buddhism. You know, we know all about psychology. You know, we invented it, the Buddhists. You know, by meditating, understanding how the mind works, and just so even today, you know, I go overseas and I give lectures in universities about psychology. This last time, University of Toronto, McGill University in Montreal, Dalhousie in Halifax, University of Hamburg, and University of Cambridge as well. That's quite a few big universities talking about psychology. So, but you know, sometimes I get a bit upset. But it's all right to be upset. I've given myself an upset license, signed it, and given it to myself. Because sometimes we get all these ideas, we spread it around, we tell everybody how it works, and then you guys go there and make money out of it. We don't give us any sort of commission. It's true, you know, this. I saw this, I was in Singapore, and it was on a big conference, and it was a person, a psychologist, who was presenting some cutting-edge techniques on psychology. Cutting-edge. So this was spreading it out to other people so they could also use this. And it was spreading out to me as well. And as this guy came on, he was actually from Sydney. Now, he made a video about this. He was making a fortune out of this little technique. He said the problem with the difficulties in your life, like a divorce, like an illness, somebody dying, losing your job, or whatever else is you're doing, he said, it's a simile of the hand. The problem is, how big is your hand? When you put it right in front of you, it's so big you can't see anything in the whole world. The problem is not the size of your hand, it's just your perspective. Put your hand where it belongs, at the end of your arm, and then you can see the hand, you can also see all of you nice people as well. So any problem in life is like a hand. You're holding it too close, and all you can see is your problem. You can't see anything else in the whole world. Put it out here, you see the whole world, and the hand hasn't diminished inside, but the perspective has given you seeing other things as well. Now, for those of you who've been coming here for years, you know I've been teaching that for as many years as you've been coming here, 20, 30 years ago. And this guy in Sydney is making a fortune about it now. And I'm really fed up because I don't get any commission, at least 10% for inventing it. 5% I'll settle for. But of course, that's not the problem. I'm happy that people are using these to lessen people's suffering. But you know, they come from monks like me. So this is where, no, this is cutting edge. In Dhammaloka Buddhist Center in Nolomau on a Friday night, this is where it begins. This is where it starts. And you hear it first. So this idea of like the attitude, I'm sure that your psychologists now will start be giving out grumpy licenses now. But anyway, well, it's a strange, you need a dog license, you need a cat license now, a license to get married, and you had death license, you need a death license today. You need licenses for everything now. So why can't you have a grumpy license? So feel free to do it. So anyway, being sick, many people say that's a stigma too. And I remember years and years and years ago, I was teaching meditation, I think in prisons, really a lot teaching in prisons. And you know, if you teach meditation, it's supposed to make you healthy. That's what it says. Go to meditation, acupuncture, yoga, eat well, exercise, you're supposed to be healthy, aren't you? So I was living a very healthy lifestyle, meditating, stress-free life at a monastery, blah, blah, blah. And then I got some sort of sickness, and I had to go to the doctor's surgery. And I was sitting in the doctor's surgery, waiting to be called up for the appointment, when one of my friends, he was one of the officers in one of the prisons I used to visit, he knew me really well. And as soon as he saw me, he recognized me. I don't know why I'm always so easy to recognize in Perth. It must be my smile. Is it my smile? Is it something else? And anyway, he recognized me straight away. He looked at me, and I could visualize this right now. He looked at me and he said, "Ajahn Brahm, I never expected to see you in here." And it was like I was caught in a brothel or in a pub or something. I felt so guilty as a monk. Monks are supposed to be healthy. You're not expected to find monks in a doctor's surgery. And that started, why is it a stigma to be sick? Like this gentleman over here, you know, he runs an alternative therapy, teaches other people about homeopathy and all sorts of stuff. And imagine that you go and you're sick in a hospital or somewhere, and people say, "You've been teaching us how to be healthy all these years, and now you're sick? You hypocrite." It's not that case. Sickness is okay. So when you're sick, celebrate your sickness. Don't stigmatize it. And if you celebrate your sickness and don't stigmatize it, you find it's not so intense and you get healthy pretty quickly. You see the negativity we give to these things in life? I'm sick. So you get one of the biggest emotional sicknesses these days, depression. And I'm not talking about the really big depressions, you know, where you really do need to have some professional care. Maybe you're just really just medium depressed. You know, just like always. Then I tell people, look, milk depression for all you can. You don't have to go to work in the morning. You can lay in. Isn't that nice? It's like Sunday morning, every morning of the week. And people will come and visit you.
because, oh, they're sad, oh, you're depressed, I'll come to cheer you up. So many of your children will never come to visit you normally. Now you say, I'm depressed, I'll come to see you. And you can sit and just watch your favourite movies. You can be pampered if you're depressed. You can eat whatever you want because I want to try and cheer you up. So anyone who's really depressed, please enjoy it. Make the most out of it. It doesn't come that often in your life. And get in there and enjoy it. And once you sort of start getting better, forget telling people you're getting better. Just have an extra couple of days off work in bed being pampered. Now you see what I'm saying over here? That's not a prescription for what you should do, but that gives you an idea of the attitude towards these things in life. Instead of just trying to get rid of them and thinking this is bad, I've made a mistake, this is awful, how about changing the stigma and learning how to even be at peace and even enjoy these things in life? They come, they go. You know, the thing is, if you change the attitude, number one, they don't last that long. If you change the attitude, and also you don't get so deeply into the negativity of these states. And so you lose your job. Woohoo, I've lost my job. Now I can really relax. I can come to the temple more often. I can go to the nuns' monastery to help do their work. And you can volunteer for this place to do work and all sorts of stuff. And don't worry, if you don't have any food, just come to a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. There's so much food there. And you can see why I get fat being a monk, because there's so much food. And if you want to help me sort of lose weight, you have to come and help me eat it. So in other words, you know, just there's always things you can do. So don't get so upset when these things happen. So when you don't stigmatize losing your job, when you don't stigmatize retiring, when you don't stigmatize, you know, when you've lost your boyfriend or girlfriend. Again, what do you say? You've lost a girlfriend? Or lost a boyfriend? What are you doing? Recycling, thank you. The world is like a cycle. It goes round and round. You just watch the planets, the seasons. That was beautiful being in Canada, just when I was in Canada, because it was the fall season. And just timed it to the day. The colours were exquisite, because you don't see those over here in Australia. Not in Perth, anyway. Incredible deep oranges and like flaming reds on the trees. And there's still green there as well, and the oranges. It was exquisite, and people actually told me, if I went, they asked me, please don't go for a walk in the forest. If I went in a walk for a forest, my robes are camouflaged, they'll never be able to find me afterwards. This is why the whole forest was this sort of colour. And it's gorgeous over there. So these are times of the year, you know, which shows the cycles of existence. You know, the reincarnation, the rebirth of not just your body, but of your happiness. And your relationships and your jobs, this all gets reincarnated. Don't think it's dead. I've lost a relation and a relationship. I've lost a job. I've lost my health. It goes round again. And that's a very beautiful thing to see when things go round and round and round. And one person once gave me this beautiful simile. They said, when you really feel depressed and down and things aren't going well in life, and you can't see any happiness at all in life, it is just like, you know, the winters in Northern Europe. There's no green on the leaves. I've got no green on the trees. All the leaves have fallen off. And there's no life around. All the animals, they hibernate. They go underground. And you can't see any life in the ground in sort of December and January and February. It's all dead. But even though it looks all dead in your life, and there's no hope, there's no green, there's no life, you know that there are seeds underground. There are bulbs, there's life, which is pregnant, just waiting to come forth. The first warmth and rain of maybe April, certainly March, maybe certainly April. And all that life which is stored up underneath bursts forth. And any of you have been in sort of those, was it temperate climes, whatever? But I think you know what I mean. Where you have a real springtime. Life just bursts out of this dead ground. And it's absolutely gorgeous. You know, the grass comes up, the flowers, the daffodils, and the trees start to blossom. And life begins out of death. And that idea of a cycle of existence going round and round is a very reassuring one, because it's so truthful. Yeah, you're down right now, but don't stigmatize the winters of your life. Because all those winter times of your life, you know what's coming next. And when it does come, sometimes the winter time was worth it. The springtime, when everything becomes alive and gorgeous and beautiful and happy and sunny again. Wow. So if you ever have any suffering, difficulties, problems in life, you're just going through the winter time. It will not last. You know the summer's coming soon. Or like the other simile somebody told me, you know, sometimes life is really difficult. You've got so many pressures on you. From all sides you're being attacked, it seems. And they said that was sometimes like the flower in a bud before it blooms. You can imagine this tight ball of life. And inside you can't see it. Those flowers, the petals are growing and growing and growing until the pressure gets so strong it's almost unbearable. Do you understand what I mean in life? Sometimes the pain, the difficulties, the problems are so tight, it's unbearable. You don't know how you can last another day. You know, when you've got these tragedies that someone close to you has died, or there's some terrible accident, losing your job, whatever it is. But then it bursts. And from this tight, painful little bud, the flower comes out. Fragrant, delicate, and so beautiful. It's a very beautiful simile of how these incredibly wonderful flowers of your life, before they burst into bloom, there's a tension, a tightness there. That's what it's like. So don't stigmatize the pain and difficulties in life. It's from that we get the beautiful flowers. From the winters, we get the spring. From the death, we get the life. From the sickness, we get the health. From the divorce, we get the freedom. There's always some way. From your parents' death, you get the legacy. It's great being a mug who could be naughty, because say things which are really over the top. Well, I like doing that, because there's always something nice about these things. So the whole point is, don't stigmatize these things. And when you understand these things, you can actually let people know, I'm sick. You know, I've got cancer, I'm dying, or something else. Please don't hide it in yourself. Share it out. And when you make mistakes, please let people know. I always say this. Some of the mistakes we make in life, oh, that creates so much happiness when you share it with others. And realize that no one is perfect in this world. And when we realize we're not perfect in this world, we all make mistakes and do stupid things. We don't stigmatize mistakes anymore. You know what it's like? Sometimes you make a mistake. And did you do that? No, it wasn't me who passed wind in the car this afternoon. not me. Yeah, it was. What's wrong with that? It's natural. Can you please put your hand up here if you've never farted in the temple before? No one's put their hand up, so you're all guilty of it. But I always tell people, you know, if you do have a problem with, you know, your intestines and you pass too much wind, please always sit in the back, not in the front. So that means you don't upset. That's why I know the people who sit in the back, while they sit in the back, you know why they sit in the back? They're so compassionate they don't want to asphyxiate all the other people. Oh, I can see you all now sitting in the back. So, but it's part of life. Why do we sort of, you know, get upset about this or ashamed about it? It's just what people do. And that's one thing I've known. Even like as a monk, you know, people have said, oh, there's certain things you shouldn't do, and are you supposed to please other people? It's not being natural. It's not being who you are. And so because of that, I don't want to stigmatize anything in life. And when you don't stigmatize it, making mistakes is okay. Passing wind is okay. Being sick is okay.
having depression, any mental illnesses is okay. Imagine a world where there's no stigma, where people accept one another. That is called unconditional love. Not just the people with Down syndrome. Down syndrome, the door of my classroom is open to you. No matter who you are, come in. People going through divorce, the door of my heart is to you. All the time, even if I may be a friend of the people, a person you're throwing away. Sickness, the door of my heart is open to you. You can come in. You're teaching me something. It's unpleasant. It's hard to bear. But it's worth it in the end. A lot of times, all those difficulties which you faced in life, at the end of your life, I can almost guarantee, at the end of your life, you realize why you had to go through all of that and how it was worth it. Painful, but thank you. Which means you're not stigmatizing life at all. You open the door of your heart to it. So it's not saying to people, metta is not may all beings be happy and well. May all beings be who they are. May they be part of life. May all beings be happy sometimes, grumpy other times. May all beings be healthy sometimes and sick other times. May all people live and die. May all people have wonderful marriages and divorces as well. May all people be free. Free from all this controlling. All of these things we're supposed to do, we're not supposed to do. All of these stigmas, which means, you know, you have to pass your exams, you're not allowed to fail. You have to be popular, you're not allowed to sort of be alone. You have to be, all of those have to be stigmatizing life and causing far too much suffering. So whoever you are, wherever you are, of whatever part of life you're going through, the winters, the springs, the summers, or the falls of life, may you all be at peace with that. Happy, grumpy, you are allowed. So that's the talk for this evening. Not stigmatizing life. Very good. So, now we have some that's gone internet. So, we have these questions from overseas. But first of all, any questions from anybody here? Okay, we've got some questions from overseas, first of all. So here we go. From Malta. That's a good one. I haven't got one from Malta before. Oftentimes, a colleague or a friend would comment about someone else in a judgmental way. I find that hurtful, but I feel a bit unsure how to behave in such situations. When I ignored them, they comment that I ignore people. When I try to make them realize that this person might have their reasons, they become frustrated. How to behave in such cases? How to behave with significant others who say hurtful things about others? How many of you have said hurtful things about someone else? Put your hands up. Come on, I've done it as well. So it's natural. It'd be very weird if you found a person never said anything hurtful. So in the context of this talk, first of all, if someone says something about someone else in a judgmental way, please accept that as part of life. They may be in a bad mood. Please don't you judge them back. Otherwise, you're just criticizing somebody from what you about what you're doing yourself. And it's an amazing thing, because if you accept a person who is judgmental, you don't judge them for being judgmental. That is the most powerful way to ease them out of those hurtful words. Because just like the elephant story, if you are a person who accepts even people who say bad things, you don't say bad things back to them. It means you are influencing them to be like you, peaceful, at ease, accepting people with their mistakes, with the silly things they do, as part of life. So, if a person does, you know, criticize another person, oh, sometimes just they're in a bad mood, or they've misunderstood what's gone on, they've got the wrong end of the stick. So, let it go. And instead, just be kind back. Give kindness for hurtfulness. And if you've got a significant other, It's amazing these new words, significant other. It means your partner, your husband or wife or whatever it is, who says hurtful things about others. Don't say hurtful things to them because they are the bad elephant and you have to be the good monk or good nun in the elephant enclosure so you can influence your husband. But if you are as bad as he is and criticize him for doing hurtful things, then the hurt just keeps on going stronger and stronger. So we can react in a different way. People are in a bad mood sometimes. They may have gone through difficult things in their life. And maybe just, you know, if you had been what they've been through, maybe, you know, you would understand why they say these things or why they do these things. So what I would say how to behave is with this beautiful kindness which accepts people for who they are. Even if they say hurtful things. What was that story? Because I give so many talks, I don't know which story I said where and when. So it may have been repeated from the last time I gave a talk here, but the monk's brother come to visit him in Bodhinyana Monastery. And there's not enough space at Bodhinyana Monastery, so this monk's brother had to share the room with the monk. They said they grew up together. It's my brother, it's okay. I gave permission, but I did warn him. I said, at your age, your brother is going to snore. And probably you do too. That's par for the life, par for the course when you get to a certain age. Women as men, don't say your husband snores and you don't. The wife snores as well. We all snore. And so I said, look, you're going to have a hard time. And sure enough, his brother went to sleep first of all, and this monk could not get to sleep because of the snoring, which was really loud in the same room. But because he was a monk, because he was my disciple, he had learnt how to deal with those problems. Just open the door of your heart to it. Don't fight it, but actually change your attitude. He couldn't stop his brother snoring. He certainly could change the way he looked at it. And so he started to imagine it was like modern music. Like, you know, an innovative, cutting-edge symphony. And that's all it needed. And he said, he told me, he came and told me the story afterwards, how well it worked. And after about half an hour, the snoring was just so beautiful. It was just so soft and melodious. It's the same old snoring as usual, but because he changed his perception, so soft and melodious. And that's the last thing he remembered before he woke up in the morning. That's how he went to sleep, with the melodious snoring of his brother. So if you've got a husband who snores, again, do the same. Just change it to this beautiful modern Sri Lankan music with all the drums and the elephants and the conches. Now this is the thing here, this is how we behave. So change the hurtful noises into something else. You can't change so the world, but you can change the way you look at it. And then actually, being quite contradictory to what I said at first, you actually change the world that way. Anyway, this is from the United States, I study climate change and am increasingly paralyzed with fear about it. How can one cope with this fear? One of the other things I said earlier, because this was what I wanted to have as a title for my book, is not "Don't Worry, Be Grumpy," but the other thing which I've said, "Don't Worry, Be Hopey." And where that came from, you know, this saying has been going around, this line has been going around for a long time, "Don't Worry, Be Happy." That doesn't gel with me, "Don't Worry, Be Happy." But "Don't Worry, Be Hopey" does gel with me, because what is worry anyway is looking at the future, say with climate change, looking at the future with a negative mind, thinking of all the things which can go wrong, which might go wrong, which probably will go wrong. And then, I'm worried. But instead of worrying, that's looking at the future with negative mind, look at the future with a positive mind, all the things which might go right, which is possible. And we call looking at the future with a positive mind, we call hope. So don't worry, be hopey. Not happy, be hopey. So, and that actually overcomes a lot of fears. As I said in psychology lectures, If you worry about something, of all the things which might go wrong, you're increasing the probability that they will go wrong. But if you have hopiness, you know, you actually look at the future with hope, you are increasing the chances that a positive outcome will actually occur. It's amazing just how we create the future. And if you worry a lot, you actually bring out the things you're worried about. You make them happen. If you're hopey, look at the positive things in the future, then you may be able to find ways of actually bringing those positive outcomes into fruition. So, Andy from USA, you study climate change, but please, don't worry, be hopey. And the last little thing about that should really be the whole subject of a talk about solving problems. There is a problem with climate change, and sometimes it seems to be impossible. It's because we look at it the wrong way. We're at this point A, the current situation in our world. We want to find out how we can get to point B, where the climate change problem has been solved. And getting from A to B is impossible. So we go the other way around. We imagine being at point B, where carbon emissions have been reduced to almost zero. Imagine that. Now work backwards. How do we get there? And that different way of solving problems. Instead of getting from A to B, you're at B. Imagine B. Now see how you got there. Go to A. And I mentioned that. You know how I mentioned that? I did another lecture. Where was that? I think that was also, no, it was University of Toronto or McGill. No, it was at McGill University. At McGill University, which is really one of the, I think it's the top university in Canada, McGill. It's in Montreal. And there that they wanted to ask me about, you know, the ordination of bhikkhunis, which we did here. I'm famous for that now, worldwide. And they said, why did you do it that way? You know, actually ordain bhikkhunis rather than get everybody in line first of all, everybody agreeing with what you were doing. And I said, look, that's not how you do things in the real world. So what we did, I imagine, you know, this is when we didn't have any fully ordained women in Buddhism, in Theravada, especially not in the West. So this is what I want to be. Imagine where there are female monks, nuns, male monks, living in equity, both respected. I imagine that. Now, how do we get there? You're working backwards from B to get to A. And that's how one of the reasons why we did it that way. The reason why, to solve a problem like climate change. If you start with what you have right now, and it's impossible, you don't see how on earth that could be achieved. There's too many obstacles, too many difficulties, just like ordaining bhikkhunis. But that is not the way to solve the problem. Don't start from A. It's hopeless. You don't have the inspiration to see ways of solving the problem. Start from B, for goodness sake. It's done. We made it. We've achieved it. Now, how do we get there? Work backwards from the solution, not work forwards from the problem. So that's a brilliant way. So, Andy in the USA, you're studying climate change. Don't study the problem. Study the solution. Go from the solution backwards and how all those problems were overcome. And then you'll find ways. That's amazing. These monks these days, we know everything. As I say, if you're modest, tell everybody about it. Okay, any questions from the floor here? So you're all question free? You're not going to line up afterwards and ask me questions? Yeah, I know you are. Okay, fair enough. Okay, that's enough for this evening because I have to have an early night jet lag and all that. So let's now pay respects to the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and thank you all for coming this evening. It's nice to be back again. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangha.